along to the Retro Asylum podcast. Myself, Matt Dinaris, taking you through the next 25, 30 minutes, something on those lines. We are the UK's number one retro podcast, and we are available on iTunes. Don't forget to pop along to the website, www.retroasylum.com. Come and join the forum, the discussions there. Leave your comments for the podcast, that kind of thing. So, I'm presenting the show on my own. This is the 14 and a half podcast. The half podcasts are shorter, a little bit more snappy. We're covering maybe one subject in these. So, what am I going to cover in this one? I was going to do one game, concentrate on one game, but then I thought games, you know, everyone talks about games all the time, and of course I'm going to concentrate on games, but I thought, well, let's concentrate on a developer this time. So, I'm choosing Team 17 for the Amiga. Team 17... maybe seemingly the obvious choice, one of the newer school Amiga developers and turned publishers as well. But I'm going to flip it on its head slightly and be controversial and say Team 17 weren't as good as what everyone makes out. Now, might sound strange, and to say Team 17 weren't very good is completely wrong. What I'm saying is they weren't as good as what everyone made out. The magazines pretty much raved over them. Everyone went mad for them. Their games rightfully sold very, very well. Even in the latter days of Amiga's commercial phase, they were selling very, very well and really making a name for themselves. And I'll come on to a bit about that later on. Team 17. So let's just go into who they are. Where did they come from? Born out of 17-bit software, PD library software house selling PD tiles to the public. There's many, many different PD shops that were available on the Amiga and many other platforms as well. But Team 17, one of the bigger ones, run by Martin Brown. Also, I think 17-bit software was born out of a shop as well, a computer shop, maybe a fully Amiga shop, don't really know on that one. So Team 17 were born, but strangely, in the first game and the second game, they were called Team 7, published by Team 17. And strangely, the first game was actually published by Codemasters. So the 17 part of it come along a bit later, which was, like I say, it's a bit weird. Miami Chase, first game, published through Codemasters at a low price, I believe. And in this one, it said it was by Team 7, not Team 17, yet had the Team 17 logo. Much like the second game, Full Contact, had the Team 17 logo, still called Team 7. Not quite sure what happened there. Slightly inconsistent, but first game come along, 1990, this is when Team 17 were born. The original team was Andreas Tadic doing the coding, along with Peter Tulby, who was also a coder then, but he seemed to disappear after the Alien Breed games. Rico Holmes in the graphics, always a real, quite classy graphics artist, and very, very versatile. And Alistair Brimble doing the music. Ali Brimble was prolific musician in the Amiga days, and still is quite prolific to this day with his own company. They were born, like I say, out of 70-bit software, and I would assume that Martin Brown watched a lot of the demo scene demos that were around on the Amiga, and still are around on the Amiga. And I think Andreas Tadic and Rico Holmes come from a demo scene group. I'm not going to go into demo scene here. Google it, you'll find out lots of wonderful things of the lovely underground world of demo scene. I was sort of a part of that in some small way. There's a few productions out there with my music in it. So yeah, there was the small, close-knit team to begin with. Ali Brimble doing the music, like I say, and Rico Holmes, Andreas Tadic. Miami Chase, first game, Codemasters, and awful. Absolutely awful. Must admit to not knowing about this game until very, very recently when I was doing a bit of research for this, ready for this podcast. Oh, I played it the other night and it was dire, in all honesty. Nice presentation, typical Team 17 polish right from the off. They were giving it the large one on the polish side of things, but my god, the game was appalling. Really awful control method, overhead racing game, or overhead chase game, hence the name Miami Chase, but it was dire, really not good at all. The game that really put them on the map was Full Contact, because it wasn't just, well, it was their first published game by themselves, so it was the first game that was completely their product. It was a budget game, from what I remember. Beat-em-up game, scrolling beat-em-up game, similar vein to IK Plus, not quite as good in all honesty, but a good solid game. Again, presentation, pretty much lifted and shifted out of Miami Chase, very, very similar. Nice music, great graphics, just a good solid game, but playing it now, it's dated badly, it doesn't play particularly well, but at the time, for a 7 or a $9.99 game, it was well worth it, really, really nice. So then we come on to the first of their major brands, if you can call it that, Alien Breed. Again, I think it's 1991 that came out, much like Full Contact. Full Contact could have well have been latter half or very, very late in 1990. So Alien Breed, what can I say about it? Overhead shooting aliens running around, gauntlet style game. I think it's more akin to Paradroid in a lot of ways, where you have doors to open, you've got to find a key or complete a mission on a level of a deck in a spaceship. And like I say, very, very similar to Paradroid, I think, in that respect. This really made an impact. Really good game, lovely graphics, great atmosphere. The speech sort of sticks with you to this day in terms of the sound. Brilliant title music, probably one of Ali Brimble's best, to be fair. And it was just a polished game, massively hard. And this followed a trend with the Alien Breed series, really, really hard, massive learning curve, unforgiving. But a good fun game to play. Magazines raved over it again. It was a very, very good game in that respect. But the Alien Breed series started there, and then there was various special editions, and I'll come on to the special editions thing in a bit. I'm not so keen on with Team 17, but Alien Breed was then followed by Tower Assault, I believe, or Alien Breed Special Edition, I think, straight after that. In 92, and then Tower Assault come in 1994. Actually, I didn't realise Tower Assault was actually after Alien Breed 2. I'm quite surprised about that. Should have done my research. Oh yeah, so Alien Breed 2 then come after the Alien Breed Special Edition, which Alien Breed 2 is very again a nice, very, very similar in gameplay, graphics refined, sound refined, gameplay refined, ridiculously hard again. Really, really hard. And it was, I believe it came out on the A1200 AGA first only, and it really showed. It was lovely, smooth scrolling, and I think you used the quarter pixel scrolling of the 1200 actually. Same development team. And again, magazines loved it, 80s and 90%. Really, really good. Then Tower Assault came, and Tower Assault was more like Alien Breed 1, and this was on the ECS chipset for the Amiga 500 and 600. And this is the one that's touted to be the best Alien Breed out of the overhead ones. And I tend to agree, it's nicely paced, the learning curve's not too bad. It's the most complete out of a lot of them. But I think for sort of eye candy and niceness, Alien Breed 2 on the A1200 takes that one. Although if you go to Alien Breed 2 on the non-1200 Amigas 500, 600, it's a lot easier because there's less sprites on screen at a time because it couldn't handle so many. So it's actually easier, but a better game to play. But something about the A1200 version that draws you back. That covers off Alien Breed. I'm not going to talk about every single game that Team 17 did. I'm going to talk a little bit about why I'm not so keen on them, really. Is the games are a little bit bland. Now, it might be a little bit controversial to say that, but essentially a great idea. Always a good idea, always a well ripped off idea as well. And this is the thing, they were very, very good at jumping on bandwagons. When there was a particular sort of craze going on, they'd jump on it, like with Body Blows. Street Fighter was very, very big at the time, Street Fighter 2. Along comes Body Blows. But very good at jumping on bandwagon or taking an idea from the past, like Project X, very similar to Nemesis and Salamander, I think, from the arcades. Almost identical weapons upgrade system and great, great shooter. It's a nice solid shoot 'em up, but it's just thoroughly stolen. And that's the bottom line of it. And that was pretty much the thing with Team 17. It was taking ideas that were already there and making it into an Amiga game, essentially, where there was an Amiga game maybe lacking. It kind of made their games a little bit bland, a little bit very of the moment, maybe not quite as timeless as a lot of other games. Don't get me wrong, they haven't aged badly, not at all, but not quite as timeless. And you could just tell it was a nicked idea. But because on the Amiga you didn't have some of these big arcade conversions or very good versions of arcade games, it was good to have someone like Team 17 who had developers who could push the hardware a little bit more. Coming from the demo scene, that's where they learnt their trade and learnt how to do things really, really well on the Amiga. And have these developers on there would create a polished, immaculate looking game that played quite well. But I think that's the overarching comment, really, is they always played quite well and never amazingly well, bar the odd one or two games here and there. And I'll come on to Super Frog now. Super Frog was a game which I think could have been a big brand. Could have been, it was quite, again, it was quite late on in the Amiga's commercial life. So it it could have been a brand, wasn't a brand. And again, it ended up a fairly, in my opinion, and I could be hung, drawn and quartered here for saying this, it's a bit bland. It's not the greatest platform game. It, again, it's okay, it's alright, and that's going to be a lot of my comments here, and you might get bored of me saying it. It's okay, it's alright, it's a solid platformer, there's no doubt about it. Graphically really nice, although something about it just lacks atmosphere. It's got a very cutesy cartoon look, but it just lacks a certain atmosphere. If you go to something like Rough and Tumble, which technically isn't quite as good on the Amiga, platform game, okay, it's a shooting platform game, but essentially it's still a platform game. Something about the atmosphere in that draws you back into it. For me, Super Frog just doesn't cut it in that way. Some lovely touches in it, some really, really nice touches. One thing I didn't like about it is when you jump, you only jump at a certain height. You could never jump a little bit lower or a little bit higher. It was just one level of jump. I didn't give it that much of a chance, I must admit, because it just didn't really appeal to me at the time. Maybe I should revisit it again at some point and really dig a lot deeper, and maybe I'll see a game in there which I missed the first time around. I know there's going to be people out there shaking their head in disgust at me right now, saying it's an amazing game. It was the best platformer on the Amiga. And I'm not of that camp. I think Amiga Power, who gave it 78%, haven't read through their review. Amiga Power could be notoriously harsh on games that everyone else loved, but I think they've got the scoring just about right there. 78. It's a good platformer, nothing more than that. And again, that's the comment I'd give for a lot of Team 17 games. Another one which we'll come on to now, which was I touched on it earlier, Body Blows. It's not great. At the time, the magazines raved about it because it was it was probably one of the better beat 'em ups on the Amiga. There's no doubt about that, but that's really not saying a lot because there wasn't that many good beat 'em ups on the Amiga. You had Elf Mania, which was all right, technically stunning, graphically stunning, and the coding in it was very, very good. Again, demo scene coders, so they knew what they were doing with the hardware. But it wasn't a good game deep down. IK Plus was on the Amiga, very, very old. Street Fighter 2 was appalling on the Amiga. I must admit, I've never played it on the Amiga, but I've watched videos and it looks shocking. It really does look shocking, and everyone who mentions anything about Street Fighter 2 on the Amiga will say it's pretty rubbish. So it wasn't in a good crowded market, and of course you've got Rise of the Robots, something I've never played either, and maybe I'll never will play it for reasons known to everyone. Not very good. So yeah, let's talk quickly about Body Blows. It was an external development team, I think, that did this, Cyanix Systems, I believe. But they ended up doing a few games for Team 17, and like I say, it was an alright beat-em-up. But in this day and age now, where you've got emulators on your PC, on your Mac, on your Linux device, that even on a fairly modest platform will emulate the SNES, the Mega Drive, main, so it emulates any of the arcades, anything up to the 3D platforms, just before the 3D platforms, it emulates them as good as perfect, really, doesn't it? It really does. And then you can play Street Fighter 2, fuck me, that's quick, special, Japanese edition, bootleg version, whatever you want to call it. You can play that perfectly. Would you go back and play Body Blows now on the Amiga? Absolutely not. Nah, not even give it half a chance. It's a very average beat-em-up. It's got special moves, it's got loads of characters in it. There's an AGA 1200 version, there's even a CD32 version, but it's bland. It's really, really bland. And again, the presentation's really, really nice on it, and it's your typical Team 17 game, I feel. So, you know, that's what I'm feeling about Body Blows. But let's go and come to their main brand, which we'll talk about, and I'm sure everyone knows what this is. A couple more games that did stand out for them was ATR by Jamie Woodhouse, which stands for All Terrain Racing, for those that didn't know. Is a wonderful overhead racing game. Slightly underrated, I feel, in the magazines, 70s and 80s. It's the mechanics of the game is brilliant. It's smooth. There's lovely inertia on the cars, and it's just and it looks beautiful as well. It's it was a completely different development team on that one, other than Alistair Brimble doing the music. It's just mighty slick, very Neo Geo style graphics, slightly isometric overhead racing game, and it. I still play that to this day. It really is a great game to play. One of the untouchable overhead racing games, in my opinion. I'm quite biased on that because I really took to that game early on, but it's brilliant. So Jamie Woodhouse did that. He also did Nitro and Quack on the Amiga, and available now on all good iOS platforms is Retro Racing, which, in a very similar vein to ATR and Nitro, it's by Jamie Woodhouse, and it plays very similar. Check that out on your iOS device. Really good game. Love a little plug there for Jamie. Hello to Jamie. How you doing? So that's ATR, one of the best Team 17 games. Like I said, Project X was very, very good, and Super Stardust was one of my favourite games of from Team 17. Strangely, Stardust didn't come out on Team 17. I'm just about to see who that publisher put Stardust out, but Super Stardust. Looking on their website here, it looks like Bloodhouse themselves put it out, but I don't remember who published that. But Super Stardust, Team 17 signed up, took it on. It's a really slick Asteroids clone, essentially. And again, the magazine reviews were spot on around the sort of late 80s, early 90s. Great title music. From memory, it used 6 channels in the Amiga's 4 channels. It had a very husky sound to it, which is when you try to stretch the amount of channels in the Amiga, that's what happened. Octomed did it with 8 channels, and it had that husky but almost nice sound to it. But yeah, the title music was brilliant on that. Real stands up today, is a really, really good tune. Bloodhouse have gone on to they're still going now. I can't remember what the most modern game is they've done. Well, they've obviously done Super Stardust on the PSP, and I think the PSP Vita version is coming out as well. I'd say really slick Asteroids clone, nice game. If you like Asteroids and you like all the Asteroids clone, like was it Blastroids, was it Blaster, and if you love Stardust, you're going to love Super Stardust. That was one of the better Team 17 games. But going back to this sort of slightly bland, just a blandness about their games, I can't think of any other word to go for it. Very, very technically great games, lovely graphics all the times, great presentation, but something that they just weren't amazing. And I think everyone, or a lot of people now, would turn around and say they're amazing games, but they weren't amazing. They were good, solid games, and that's what I felt about them. And you know, Alistair Brimble, the musician, massively competent, really, really versatile in the style of tunes he can do, and did some really, really great tunes. But would you rate him up there with Rob Hubbard and Martin Galway and Ryan Overhand? I don't know whether I said that right. Did Last Ninja 2 remix tune on the Commodore 64. You know, those great chip musicians and some of the great Amiga musicians as well. He's not really up there with the best of them, but a very, very versatile musician. And it was the same with the Coders. They were technically brilliant. Just the gameplay wasn't always there. So a quick rundown of some of the other games that were more of the standout games for Team 17 was Assassin, which was a sort of Strider type of game. Again, nice game. Then there was some of the not so good games. I think it was F-17 Challenge and Cardiacs, which is a sideways scrolling shoot 'em up, which was particularly poor. There were some other good games like Arcade Pool and Arcade Snooker, good, quick, easy two-player games. So I could keep on going on about a lot of their games. I'm not going to go through that. That's not what this podcast was about, really, initially. But I will just quickly touch on Alien Breed 3D, which I didn't mention. Alien Breed 3D 2. This was when Doom and Quake were the big must-haves in the PC world, and Team 17 jumped on that bandwagon. I don't know, it spoiled the game. Spoiled the game completely. It didn't run very well on anything other than an upgraded A1200. It was very slow. The Amiga wasn't particularly good at doing that whole first-person graphics engine, really. It could do it, just not with a huge amount of detail. And CD32 was a bit better because it had the Akiko chip in it, which was the chunky planar chip. But it didn't feel like an Alien Breed game. It just felt like a first-person naff shooter, really. A couple of the magazines raved over it because it was one of the de facto first-person shooters on the Amiga. There was a few others. Gloom, Fears, Breathless. I think that covered most of them, actually. Gloom was an out-and-out, just shoot things. Quite a fun game, actually. It was quite good by Acid Software, I think. By Mark Sibley, who did Blitz Basic 2. But Alien Breed 3D 2, it didn't capture the feeling of the other Alien Breed. It lacked the atmosphere, it lacked the sort of out-and-out mad shooting at aliens, and it wasn't very good. I think it lost its identity at that point. But there were some other alright games, some particularly bad ones. But we'll come to their main brand now, the brand that keeps Team 17 going to this day. Alien Breed does, it's there on the 360 and I think PlayStation 3 as well. But Worms, who hasn't heard of Worms? Worms is a turn-based shooting game. I don't know what the genre is. There's a strategy shooting game. While not being original, because I think there was a game called Tanks, something like that, on PC-DOS, or could have been an early Amiga PD game. And you take it in turns to, in this big scrolling playfield, and shoot each other by setting the angle of your gun or your weapon, setting your power, then trying to shoot the people. But Worms did it with massive personality, nice graphics. It was submitted to Team 17, from what I remember reading, by a guy called Andy Davidson, who has just recently rejoined Team 17, actually, to work on the Worms brand. And I think, again, it was done in Blitz Basic 2, originally on the Amiga. It was a great, fun game, especially in 2 or 4 player. Really, really good. I can see it working really well online. I really should get myself a copy on the iPhone or the iPad and have a good go at that online, because it's a cracking game. Like I say, it's got massive personality, nice graphics, wicked little sound effects. It could get a bit tiresome, but it's a good, really, really good game. And yeah, that's the brand. That's the brand that Team 17 are known for, and pretty much what they've based their revenue streams on of recent times. So that's still going now, Worms, and it was very, very good on the Amiga. It was the original one, obviously, and that's gone from strength to strength through pretty much every platform you want to shake your stick at. And going back to the special edition as well, this is something else Team 17 did, was released a few special editions. Now, I think after the first time they did it, they saw there was a little market here for special editions. So Project X, Assassin, Alien Breed all had special editions. And generally they were toned down, not so hard. So I think, I don't know, maybe I'm being a bit cynical here, is that when they first did a special edition and saw it sold well, they thought, maybe they thought, I'm theoretically speaking here, that they could make the original game hard. Project X was again, really, really steep learning curve, really, really tough game, like the Alien Breeds. And then a special edition was released to tone it down, make it easier. Same with Assassin. At a lower price point, though, I'll give them that. It was at a lower price point. But I don't know, the sceptic in me makes me think there's a revenue stream there. And who wouldn't, really? They're a business, after all, and business is business, however you look at it. And you've got to sustain your business, however you look at it. And I understand that. It's a revenue stream. You've got to keep your shareholders happy. End of story, really. So I may have been a bit harsh through some of this roundup on Team 17, so I'm going to try and start wrapping up now. I've just realised I'm knocking on the door of 25 minutes of ramble and utter nonsensical chitter-chatter here. I might have been a bit harsh. I've got a lot of respect for Team 17. you wouldn't think it, would you? I've got a lot of respect for Team 17. Essentially, every one of their games that was good was a very, very solid game. They had some downfalls in, like I said, the F-17 Challenge and Cardiacs, but generally speaking, good, solid games. And over and above everything else, I think they sort of had the ethic of the Amiga. They had the ethic down to a T. They were solely Amiga for a good period of time, obviously, until the Amiga was just not commercially viable anymore. But they had this close-knit team of people making games, and from what I remember reading of interviews and since then, they were pretty good with paying their developers and they really respected their developers. Martin Brown ran the show, and he still runs the show to this day. I got a lot of respect for him as well. He's always come across as a very nice bloke in interviews. Yes, I will say I've got a lot of respect for Team 17. They've done a lot of games that I've got some memories attached to. But I will still keep harking back to this. They were a bit bland. A lot of their games were just good, solid games without really standing out. I won't go into Team 17 on the other platforms. They've gone through most platforms. I don't know what they've released on them. I remember this Stunt Tracks game on the Dreamcast, but from what I remember seeing of it, it wasn't great. And again, Worms brand has kept them going, and now they're they've been working on the Alien Breed series again. And I hope for their sake they really start to push out a new idea, something that really, really hits them. And I know the digital distribution model that's now on all consoles really suits them, because you don't have to worry about publishers as such. You can just put it out there yourself. And if you put in a good quality game out there, it's going to sell to some degree. So that's the roundup of Team 17. It's good development team. Just not quite as good as what a lot of people say. And you can see that I'm not overly enamoured by them, but I do respect them. I think they really summed up the Amiga, certainly in the later stages, the Amiga's commercial life. So anyway, I've rambled on now. I've really knocked past the door of 25 minutes. So that's what I'm going to concentrate on this podcast. And this has been episode 14 and a half of the Retro Asylum podcast. Leave your iTunes reviews. We love to hear them. At the moment, I think they're all at 5, which is brilliant. If there's anyone out there who's listening who doesn't think they're very good, leave a review. Criticism is all very good, as long as it's constructive, of course. Don't just leave one saying you're rubbish. Doesn't wash very well. But good constructive criticism, I'm sure the rest of the team would agree with me on this one, will help us improve it. And if you go along to the Retro Asylum website, www.retroasylum.com, there's lots of videos up there, lots of reviews, and a lovely little community on the forum. So get yourself over there, get yourself known, join up, and remember to subscribe to this podcast. So you've been listening to Matt Dinaris rambling on about Team 17. I hope that I haven't bored you too much, and that I'll be doing another little developer's insight in the future. Thanks. Take care now. Bye. So I'm willing to eat some words here and taste some humble pie. So have we got any kind of suitable music that I can put in the background here to make me eat my words a little bit? Yeah, that sounds about right. Maybe that's a little bit too tongue-in-cheek. Anyway, to the point of this little amendment at the end, addendum, some people may call it. Super Frog, I was a little bit scathing earlier on in the podcast, saying that it wasn't really that good a platform game. I have since gone back and had a little play on it, and I've got to say I quite enjoyed it. I think it's a good solid platform game. I think it runs in the similar vein to all other Team 17 games. It's not outstanding, but it's really quite good. The level design is nice. The gameplay mechanics sit somewhere between Mario and Sonic, probably more Sonic with the speed that you can run at. One criticism I would say is the jumping. Unlike what I think I said earlier on, that you can only jump at one height. That is not the case. You can have a slight variation in the height you can jump at. But I will say that it is a very floaty kind of jump. Doesn't bear any relation to the speed you are running at that particular point in time. But yeah, the graphics are good. Like I said earlier on, moving on to level 2. That's as far as I got on. Got right near to the end of level 2. So maybe I'm missing even more in the last few levels. The graphics are really, really nice there, and I see it's introduced some different kind of enemies into the game there. What I will say, the atmosphere is definitely lacking from my perspective. Other people may not feel this, but the cutesy music, while good in itself, it's very generic. It's generic cutesy music. To use an example of some music setting a real nice atmosphere, I know it's not a platform game, but there's platform characters in it, is Mario Kart on the SNES. The ghost track, can't remember what it's called at this particular point in time, but the music on that, and this was mentioned in an earlier podcast from Retro Asylum, that it was just a really great bit of music which set a great atmosphere and integrated with the graphics and with the feel, and just created this whole atmosphere around it. And that's what I'm not getting in Super Frog. I'm just getting a cutesy platform music, generic sound coming at me to my ears. But I will firmly backtrack on what I said previously. I think it's a good solid platform game, and I think I'm going to go back and have a good old crack at getting further in the game. So yep, willing to eat my words when I'm wrong. So it's been Matt Dinaris eating his own words. Speak to you soon. Cheers, bye.